We're back with more Hit and Run with host Chris Ronji on The Score.
Watching these games, just like our fans and you guys, there's been some heart-wrenching losses because they've been really close. We've got a lot of one-run games, extra inning losses that are hard and they're difficult and they're challenging. But this group is competing. You know, the makeup of our clubhouse is strong. And I say that when you're hit with adversity, whether it be on-field struggles and losses or injuries, it's a tight-knit group that's going to continue to work. And, you know, all we can do is stay focused and continue to show up every day and put forth our best effort. It's my job to continue to motivate everyone.
That's Chris Getz of the White Sox, general manager of the team. We are talking a little Cubs and Sox baseball this morning on Hit and Run. And we'll do that just a little bit here with our next guest, Mike Farron, who joins us on the Score Hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Our guy Mike is on MLB Network Radio, a host there for years. You could follow him on Twitter at Mike_Farron, and he's with us this morning on The Score. Hello, Mike.
Hello, Chris.
What do you know, man? How are things with you?
Oh, fine. How are you?
I'm okay.
Are
you doing, Mike Farron, are you doing better than the White Sox?
I think at this point we can all say that we're doing better than the White Sox. But yes, I am doing significantly better, I think. I'm near 500.
Okay, you're near 500. So you heard from Getz there. Right now, it's 2 weeks into a season, so it may not end up being this bad, but people are talking about them as if they could be one of the worst White Sox teams in history. They're right now 2-12 on the season. They do have injuries they're dealing with. Do you believe, from a national perspective, that the Sox are as bad as their record?
I'm not sure that anybody is ever 2-12 bad, right? Like, they're definitely better than that. I don't think that they're going to win, you know, like one out of every seven games all season long. But I don't think they're a particularly good team. I mean, I know that Chris Getz has caught a lot of flack for, trying to rebuild the clubhouse as a focus and not necessarily adding anyone of impact this winter, even though it was clear they were going to take a step back. But the goal was to have better defense and better pitching. And I think when they're healthy, which it's obviously been a huge trick for the three guys that are out now, I do think that they're a better defense. And I think that their pitching should be at least a little bit more reliable than it was, you know, a year ago. I just don't think that they're going to be much of an offensive team. And I think that that's the part that is the most frustrating to watch, right? You know, like, good on Gavin Sheets getting off to the start he has, but he's been far and away the White Sox best offensive player. And they just have not had a whole lot of production behind that. And that's going to be something that they'll continue to have to work on over the next couple of years to build the next good White Sox team. Is this has been a trend over the last couple of seasons where they have been down towards the bottom of the league in terms of power and in terms of on-base percentage. And I don't know that that's going to change much, even when they get healthier. And certainly it sounded like it was relatively good news on, you know, Moncada and Robert and when they could be back. But, you know, it's just not going to be – it's not going to be a great season. I thought they would be hard-pressed to lose 100 games again. Maybe they're right around that number this season in the end, but hopefully as the year goes on, you keep adding bright spots from the organization. And, you know, Garrett Crochet has certainly been great, so that's good to see. So I think it's going to be one of those accentuate the positive seasons, but there's going to be few and far between.
Garrett Crochet off to a pretty good start, gave up the 5 runs in his last start, but he still struck out 10. So there's a lot there to like. I asked Chuck Garfine, our last guest, if he believes that can be kept up by Crochet, and if so, for how long, how many innings this season. You looking from the outside, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like, listen, I think we are still kind of getting adjusted in mainstream media to how injured pitchers coming back or being evaluated. And, you know, Kershaw is now a little bit removed from the Tommy John surgery, but I think we want to throw innings caps on guys. And I think it's probably less about that and something that's more granular in terms of, you know, how his functional strength is during the course of the year and, you know, whether or not he's suffering from fatigue, which tends to lead to more injuries, right? So I think it's tough for me to put an innings cap on it, but I think if you're talking about him making, well, let's say he makes 22, 23 starts, I think that's certainly a good sign and a good, you know, a harbinger of things to come for him. The problem is because he was added to the roster in 2020 is that he's actually careening towards free agency. And so, you know, if let's say Crochet, you know, essentially makes starts for 2/3 of the season this year and is healthy, you're only a couple of years away from him being a free agent beyond that. So you either have to get into one of your, you know, patented early career deals, which it seems a little later now as he gets into arbitration than some of the other White Sox deals have been, or you're potentially looking at him as a trade chip. Does he line up with the next window of contention? And that's one of the difficulties that they're going to have, I think, with Kershaw over the course of this season, just kind of evaluating, you know, how big an impact he'll have personally on the next good White Sox team. But I think what he's shown us is that he's got a chance to be a very, very good major league starting pitcher.
Mike Farron from MLB Network Radio is with us on Hit and Run. The National League Central right now, and again, we're a couple of weeks into the season. Brewers are at the top of the division. The Pirates got off to a strong start at 10-5. Cubs and Reds 8-6. Cardinals are the lone team in the division right now under 500. So you see the Cubs start where they are, how they've done it. As you look at them within the context of that division, is this, I personally don't know how much I believe in the Brewers or the Pirates, but is this, how close to what we're looking at now do you think is the end product in the Central Division?
Yeah, I mean, I've kind of felt all along that, like, while we mock the American League Central a little bit for the quality of competition, that the National League Central is a little different. And then instead of having, you know, a pretty clear delineation between, you know, one or two teams that feel like they're contenders and a bunch of also-rans in the AL Central, that all five teams have some semblance of a shot in the NL Central, I think the talent level is pretty close overall. Certainly the Cubs lineup being off to the start that it has been encouraging. And you know, one thing, I remember talking to a major league coach about this last year, just the importance of having that, you know, monster in the middle of the lineup, somebody who has a 900 OPS. And I don't know if the Cubs have that guy, but if they do, it might be, say, a Suzuki. And I think watching what he did in the second half last year, and then certainly the start that he's off to this season, is pretty encouraging for somebody who can anchor that lineup. Now, you know, they're missing more bats, I think, as a group than I thought they would. We'll see whether or not that's an early season mirage. But, you know, Jordan Wicks, with a strikeout rate near 30%, is pretty impressive. You know, Imanaga certainly has pitched very, very well to this point, and has, you know, has some strikeouts. And that's something that they really lacked in the rotation a year ago. So, you know, I think there's staying power for them in that division, but at the end of the day, I mean, you know, you see the NL Central a lot. Would you be surprised if first to fifth were separated by like 8 games at the end of the season? Because I wouldn't.
No.
I think it's that close.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I think this division, in a lot of ways, even though it's not the best division, might be the most intriguing, just because you could look. Like I said, I don't believe much in the Pirates, but I think you could make an argument for any of them.
I believe more in them than you do, because I think Jared Jones, the rookie right-hander, is a dude. Paul Skenes is going to come up at some point and is going to make the rotation better, because you're going to be taking guys off the back of that rotation. And O'Neill Cruz is, like I said it yesterday, like he's the guy that you create in a video game to try and dominate MLB The Show, to try and break it. Like the home run he hit yesterday in Philadelphia was a pitch that, in real time, it looked like he'd been beaten on, the kind that you know, a guy is so late on that it slices down the left field line well foul. And he kept it fair by 30 feet for an opposite field two-run homer. Like, you know, he and Ellie De La Cruz are talents in the division that could take over the division on their own. And so while I agree with you, I'm not sure that I buy Milwaukee's offensive output to this point. I don't think that they're necessarily a bad team. I think they're certainly competitive. And I think the Pirates are better than they were a year ago. Now, does that lead to more than 76 wins? I don't know, but I think that they have a puncher's chance because of the division they play in.
Mike Farron is with us on The Score. Shohei Ohtani, as we shift to the national story. First couple of weeks for him have been, well, they've been a lot. He has dealt with his interpreter being charged by the feds. He has also tied the Japanese home run record. He is, you know, he's still a remarkable player going through all of this. As you look at that entire situation with him and with his interpreter, what were your thoughts on it? Knowing what we know now, now seeing the court filing, you know, seeing what the charges are and reading through what his interpreter did, what did you think?
I mean, it's stunning. I mean, I think the you know, reading the criminal complaint from the federal government and the affidavit from the IRS agent that was leading the investigation, it was incredible the lengths that Ipe Mizuhara went to not just steal from Ohtani, but to not let on to anyone what was happening and gatekeeping Ohtani from the rest of the people who were trying to manage his life. I mean, it painted, I thought, a pretty desperate picture of an addicted gambler who, you know, was willing to do whatever it took to try and you know, stay out of harm's way, including, you know, stealing money from a guy who he didn't just work with, but, you know, had a long relationship with, going back to the time that you know, he was, Mizuhara was with Chris Martin's interpreter in Japan more than a decade ago. So I thought it was pretty, I thought it answered a lot of the questions. I thought it was unbelievably sad, you know, running up $180 million in gambling debt and being $40 million in the hole. And you can, you know, if the bookie thought for, or the alleged bookmaker thought that you know, Ohtani was backing him, you can understand why they kept extending lines of credit. But that was really, really scary stuff. And, you know, I think it's fortunate that it certainly appears that Ohtani was not involved at all in this. But I marvel at the way he's able to compartmentalize things. Like, I freak out if somebody doesn't return a text message and struggle through a show. And he's got this going on, and he's like, he's, you know, owning the National League. So he's a pretty impressive talent. The top of the lineup for the Dodgers is pretty good, I'd say, with him and Freeman and Betts, you know. And then Will Smith gets lost in the shuffle there. It's certainly been an eventful first couple weeks, as you said, for Ohtani, but his performance on the field has lived up to expectations.
What are your thoughts on the pitching injury situation and the Players Association last week saying that they blame the pitch clock for it? I have my thoughts on that. I think they're totally wrong. But I wonder if something might happen in that direction because of it. We just saw Spencer Strider. He's going to be done for the year. It's escaping me right now. That just yesterday, he had an injury as well, shoulder injury. Why am I not remembering who
Miller.
This is?
Bobby Miller.
Miller, that's it. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. So you've got that injury. You've had a number of frontline starters who get injured. Is it about the pitch clock? What happens next?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Travis Sawchuk from the other Score, the website, not the radio station, pointed out yesterday that pitching injuries aren't actually up year over year, at least when it comes to Tommy John surgeries.
They're getting a lot of attention.
Baseball. Well, it's because, I mean, you lost, you know, arguably the best pitcher in the National League in Spencer Strider and a former Cy Young Award winner, Shane Bieber, in the same weekend, right? Yeah. And that after Yuri Perez, who was one of the bright young prospects in baseball a year ago, succumbed to Tommy John surgery, despite the fact that the Marlins were unbelievably cautious with him, right? So I think that's why it is. But, I mean, listen, this is something that we have been talking a lot about over the last decade. We did, you know, back in 2014, 2015, when there was a rash of Tommy Johns, there was a huge spike in the numbers. We did specials about this. And the one thing that I keep coming back to is the increase in velocity is, and this is not just with fastballs, but if you start looking at breaking balls too, like, guys are throwing those harder. They're cranking those changeups you know, up closer to 90 miles an hour consistently, that it's putting more strain on the arm. And that seems to be one of the major contributing factors here. The problem is that you know, as one executive told me this winter, it's like the genie is out of the bottle when it comes to velocity. It works, right? The reason why teams keep chasing it is because pitchers are more effective when they throw harder. And so the question becomes, how can you train velocity more carefully and safely? And that's a multi-billion dollar question. We're never going to eliminate all of the injuries. You know, Miller being a shoulder injury, at least it sounds like it's minor. And I think for the most part, teams have done a much better job over the last 30 years of preventing major shoulder injuries than they have, you know, certainly with elbows. But a lot of that has to do with the fact that, you know, you're dealing with a different muscle structure in the shoulder, which you don't have in the arm. And so, you know, I talked to Ben Brewster this week, who runs Tread Athletics, which is one of the major pitching labs in North Carolina. And, you know, we were talking a lot about the kind of what they're trying to do to find ways to ease the load on the elbow, and while also training velocity. And he's a guy who, he's a former White Sox farmhand who has had Tommy John surgery. So it's a very difficult question to answer. It's not like we're going to all of a sudden start restrictive plate racing here, where guys are going to get charged a ball for throwing over 95 miles an hour. And I think the reason you don't see guys throwing 91, 92 all that often anymore is because the hitters have gotten better at, you know, hitting that velocity consistently. So I don't know that I have a great answer for you. I don't think anybody does, but I do think it's something that we need to continue to, I don't know if keep the pressure on, but continue to do as much research as possible to see if there are ways that we can make pitching healthier than it is right now.
Yeah, there's, look, if it works, guys are going to continue to do it. And maybe the greater problem is it's tough to even get looked at if you're not throwing hard enough. So as an amateur player, high school player, or whatever, you're not even going to get a sniff unless you're bringing heat. So that's, I think it's a problem at the lower levels, and then it filters its way up. So I'm not sure there's a fix to it.
Like this is, I mean, I think this is, it's a great point, but the thing is like, we all know this is the case. And I got a text from a buddy who was at NHSI yesterday, which is the big high school invitational tournament at the USA complex. And he's raving about a guy who was throwing 96 in the seventh inning, who is a junior in high school right now. It was like, this dude's going to be a first rounder, right? So like, we all know what the risks are. And we all know what the risks are specifically for younger pitchers as they increase velocity. And yet we're helpless to do anything other than marvel at the fact that they're throwing as hard as they are at such a young age, right? Because we know that not just is that going to be selected by teams, but it also, it works, right? Velocity plays at every level. And so it's this vicious cycle that we're in trying to make the game safer while also recognizing that for pitchers it is extremely dangerous.
Mike Farron, love talking baseball with you, my friend. Thank you for visiting with us today.
It is always a pleasure to be on with you. The only disappointment is for my friend Chuck Garfine, who you made be my opening act.
Oh, that was just an accident. Actually, I blame Sean Sears for that.
Of course you wouldn't take responsibility. Yeah.
Why would I? Good to talk to you, pal.
You too, buddy. Thanks.
Mike Farron, MLB Network Radio. He is the absolute best. He's on Twitter at Mike_Farron. We're also going to talk to Lance Brzdowski with Marquee Sports. He is an analyst and had been with Driveline Baseball. The dude knows pitching, so I want to talk to him about that. We will do that at 11 o'clock. Want to get more on the pitching injury thing, because I hate the fact that the union made the statement they made. I hate it. I knew they were going to. I figured that was going to happen because they didn't want the pitch clock in the first place, but it really bugs me. Hopefully nothing will happen as a result of it, but it is absolutely misguided to be blaming the pitch clock for any injuries in pitching, which, by the way, have been going on for a long time, not just since the pitch clock. The phone number to visit with us, and man, I'd love to hear from you. I'm with you until 12, 312-644-6767. Chris Ranji in for Spiegs on Hit and Run on The Score.
We're back with more Hit and Run with host Chris Ranji on The Score.
The payoff pitch on the way. Line drive caught by Morel at third base. Runners have to hold. Another nice play by Morel. Soft line drive. Chris wasn't sure exactly when to make the leap, but he timed it good enough and got the job done and made the catch of that line drive right down the third baseline.
And he catches this ball right off the tip of his glove. Excellent play. Christopher has saved multiple runs in this inning with his defense.
That's right, multiple plays. Couple of really nice ones. Did save some runs, potentially saving the Cubs' win yesterday. They did add on late, 4-1 final. They beat the Mariners, and they will finish up the series with a chance to win it today. By the way, today's Bulls game at the Knicks will air on WBBM News Radio 780. Pregame coverage starting at 11:45. Then the Cubs will take on the Mariners. That'll be right here on The Score. Pregame from Seattle at 2:35. Zach Zaidman, Ron Coomer have the call. First pitch will be at 3:05. You can listen to every Cubs game in Chicagoland with the free Odyssey app. That is important to keep in mind. You have to be in the listening area in order to catch free Cubs baseball on the Odyssey app. It used to be you had to get the MLB app, and not just that, but you'd have to pay for the service, the extra radio service, in order to hear the games, even locally. Finally, a couple of years ago, they did away with that. So if you've got the Odyssey app, you can listen to Cubs baseball on it. But again, it's geolocated, so you have to be in the area in order to catch those games. The number is 312-644-6767. Let us talk to John in Logan Square on Hit and Run. Good morning, John.
We just lost John.
Oh, John is gone now.
Ben in Queens is there.
How about Ben? How about Ben? Ben in Queens. What's going on, Ben?
Ranger, so good to hear you on the Chicago airwaves.
Thank you, buddy.
Love listening to you. Those White Sox post sessions were just awesome.
I'm glad they were good for somebody.
Well, entertainment. That you're in the entertainment business, right? Okay, I got two things to say. The first thing is, I think the National League Central is better than everybody is giving it credit for. Let's start with the Milwaukee Brewers, okay? They lost Counsell. They lost Corbin Burns. They don't have Woodruff. They lost Josh Hader. They don't have Devin Williams. They went into Baltimore, or they're in Baltimore right now. They're beating the crap out of the Orioles. And they have been a juggernaut. I don't see them getting any worse. I think the Cubs are good. I always talk about the Cubs. I'm not even going to talk about the Cubs. Your last guest talked about the Pirates. I think the Pirates are for real. I don't know how good they're going to be in the end, but I think they're going to be above 500. I also think the Reds are for real. And, you know, if you read any of the articles in Fangraphs, they all said – any of these teams could end up coming out first. So there's that. But let's talk about your St. Louis Cardinals. Huh? Riddle me this, Ranger. You, Mr. St. Louis, who knows exactly how to cut the pieces of Provel on the pizza down there. Okay.
It just you don't have to cut it. It just falls apart.
Oh, it falls apart. Okay. So who's going to be the next outfielder who is currently in the Redbirds organization who's going to lead another team to postseason glory? Huh? Who's it going to be? Because – You didn't like Randy Rosarena. Adolis Garcia, not good enough for you. One of the leaders in OPS right now, who? Mr. Tyler O'Neill. So who's it going to be who leads the 2026-27 Mariners to the ALCS? Is it going to be Jordan Walker? Is it going to be a falling out with Lars Nootbaar? Please let us know. I love you, Ranger. Have a good day.
Thank you, Ben. I appreciate it. You know what's really funny about that is when I moved back down here and was working at the sports station in St. Louis. This was back in 2018, 2019, well, probably 2018, because things started to turn a little bit in 1920, Rosarena being really good. But we used to have the conversation about how the Cardinals had been, up until that point, pretty good about not trading away talent and then having that talent go somewhere else and rake. It didn't happen that often. Occasionally there'd be a guy, but usually they were pretty good about not giving up talent that came back to bite them. But that has absolutely changed in the last 5 years or so. That's and Ben mentioned all of it. Who's going to be the next guy? Great question. I don't know. Jordan Walker is their, he's their big boy right now. He's the guy that they believe is going to be a really good player. He's, it doesn't always matter in baseball, but he looks the part and he's got size and there's a lot of power there. He just has to realize it. I don't know what's going to happen with him. I am actually rooting for him. He's a really good guy. He's a really good kid. So I hope that that continues. But he's off to a pretty rough start so far this season. Maybe that's the person we're talking about. I don't know. I think they'll hang on to him, though, for a while. But they did have, for quite a bit of time, actually, they had some outfield prospects, a lot of them that they felt they were dealing from a position of surplus. And it kind of turns out that they've made some wrong decisions. So Ben, great question, but I'm sure it's going to happen. I don't have an answer for you, but I would not at all be surprised if it does. The division, though, and maybe Mike Farron is right, and maybe Ben's right on this too, that the Pirates could be better than, I think, maybe I'm not giving them enough credit. And maybe I'm looking at them wrong because I've been, I don't always think this is the best way to do it, but I can't help it sometimes where I let past history inform my decision about whether or not I think they're good now. Because the Pirates 5 years ago, 10 years ago, have nothing to do with the Pirates now. But I can't help but think about the fact they typically, even if they have a good young core, don't do a whole lot to help that core out, whether it's trades at the deadline, whether it's through free agency. And but really, there are two teams in this division who are really bad at that. They are one of them, and the Reds being the other, in terms of supplementing talent. You could argue that Cincinnati, beyond that, has what appears to be actual disdain for their fan base, where they pretend, their ownership pretends like the Reds in the Cincinnati area should be happy that the Reds are even there in town. You should be thanking us that our team is here in Cincinnati. That's kind of the attitude they have. And they don't really do a whole lot to supplement their talent. The Pirates haven't done it. And historically, going back 15 or so years, didn't really do it when Andrew McCutchen was part of that really good core they had. And instead of helping the team, helping the roster, what do? They trade guys away. So while for a while, I do expect both the Pirates, well, the Reds certainly, maybe the Pirates too, to be competitive this year, I think you can make the case they can win the division, but I'm not going to make that case. Maybe next year, maybe if they change the way they do business during an off season, maybe they could sustain it. And I could be totally wrong about this. And maybe I am looking at it the wrong way, but I don't believe in the Pirates as much as what their start is showing us. So we'll see, though.
I think I agree with you there, though, Chris. You know, like Paul Skirins is their top pitching prospect. He looks really, really good.
Livy Dunn's ex-boyfriend.
Yes, I didn't know they broke up. Oh man, that's.
Oh yeah, man. I think she moved on to somebody else.
Oh boy, that's some big, yeah, LSU drama there. But they've got him. I know they've got O'Neill Cruz, who looks like, yeah, I think Mike Farron tweeted yesterday that he looks like a Correa player that you'd use to dominate MLB The Show with. Like, they've got some players, but like you said, they never invest in that team, and it's such a bummer because that park is gorgeous. It'd be so much fun to see playoff baseball there.
PNC is really nice. I've only been there for that one series. The Sox played there, I think, in 2008.
Oh,
2007, 2008, mm-hmm, whatever it was. It was actually, do you know when it was? It was right after The Sopranos ended.
Oh, no.
Because they, and I know this because they did a, with the parrot, you know, the Pirates parrot, whatever he's called. They did this whole, and it was really good. They did this kind of a parody of the final scene of Sopranos. And it was, and they put it on the video screen. They played it the entire series, and I thought that's really good. They did a nice job with that. And the ballpark is, they did it right. It looks good. It's got great sight lines. Looking in past the outfield, you see the bridge, you see the skyline. It's a really nice ballpark. And I would say, yeah, the people there who support that team deserve for the team to actually invest in it. And it's great to have good young talent, but if you're not willing to supplement it with actual, real, good major league talent, then what are you doing? All you've done then is waste drafting and developing. That's all you've done. And that is the kind of team making that I think is the most frustrating. And it's very similar to what the Sox did. They had this good young core, and instead of saying, hey, we believe so much in this team, in this young core that we've put together, we're going to invest by signing Manny. We're going to invest by signing Bryce. And they didn't even entertain it. They just said, well, what's Adam Eaton doing? What are you talking about, what's Adam Eaton? Who cares what he's doing? Go talk to Bryce Harper and give him money. Give him a lot of money to come play here. And they didn't want to do that. John in Logan Square is back with us. He's now on the Score. Good morning, John.
Hey, Chris. How are you?
I'm okay, buddy.
The problem, I'm a Cubs fan, but I really am interested in what the White Sox are doing. And, of course, you can partially rebuild through the draft, but not like you used to, where you used to be able to overpay guys, now everyone's slotted.
Yeah, that's what the Pirates did that's what the Pirates did for a long time. They were paying way over slot, and that's how they ended up with such a good farm system for so long.
The Red Sox and Theo did it, but nowadays, if you look back at how the Cubs did it when Theo and Jed were here, they did it by signing one-year contracts for guys that they knew would have value at the deadline, all right? So I'm just going to throw out a name like a Jordan Montgomery or J.D. Martinez or, like, you know, whatever. These one-year deals that might cost you $15, $20, $30 million, but teams at the deadline get desperate. There's injuries, and that's how you rebuild nowadays is you sign, you build value, and you flip, and they're not doing it, and I don't understand why, because it's also a cheap way to do it.
Well, I think you answered your question with the very last part. It's the most inexpensive way to do it, and that's why they're going that direction.
But they're not, though. That's what I'm saying. They're not signing these one. You're like, think about the Feldman trade for Arrieta and Stroh, right?
Yeah.
Or like how you traded away Dempster to get Kyle Hendricks.
Yeah. No, oh, John, I appreciate the call. I think what you're – okay. Maybe I have the wrong read on what they're doing, but it feels to me – like they are saying, I think they know what their team is. I think they know that they're not going to be any good this year. They may not be historically bad in the end. They're not going to be 1899 Cleveland Spiders bad, but they could be a really rough watch all of 2024. I think what they're saying is, even though it's a low amount of money that it would have, relatively speaking, to sign Montgomery or whomever, I think they're thinking, why even do that? Why even spend that much money? That's what I think. And I could be wrong. I could be totally wrong. But this, going into 2024, of all the seasons, all the off seasons going in, this is the least of the off seasons going in that I thought they should have invested. They should have done that 3 years ago, not now. They should have done it when the core was intact. That's when they do those things, but they didn't. They opted not to. So I appreciate the phone call, John. You are all welcome to join the show. 312-644-6767. Hey, this is something you need to know. The Score and Budweiser on May 2nd, which is a Thursday, will be at Harry Carey's Tavern, Navy Pier, for the 26th annual Worldwide Toast to Harry Carey. Parkins and Spiegel are going to be there. The broadcast that they will have is from 4 to 7. Actor and comedian Jason Alexander. Wow. The guy from Pretty Woman? He's going to be there. With a toast at 5:30, the Worldwide Toast to Harry Carey is brought to you by Budweiser. This Bud's for you. I'm really jealous that Costanza is going to be in town on May 2nd, and I won't be there. That sucks. Anyway, there you go. Go see the toast to Harry Carey at Harry Carey's Tavern, Navy Pier, on Thursday, May 2nd. We are going to continue speaking with you, 312-644-6767. Chris Ranji filling in for Spiegs on Hit and Run.
Jerry, just remember, it's not a lie if you believe it.
We're back with more Hit and Run with host Chris Ranji on the Score.
Yep, filling in for Spiegs today. Great to have you with me. Certainly appreciate you being part of the show today. The number, you've got it, it's 312-644-6767. Here's what I will say. The Players Association earlier in the week, or maybe at the end of the prior week, had released a statement after a couple of pitching injuries. Spencer Strider being one of the most recent, who had the UCL surgery, so his year is over. We saw that happen to him. Shane Bieber, also a severe injury. So what the Players Association said was basically it's the pitch clock. We didn't want them to, we didn't want them to do it the way they did it. They implemented it. Guys are getting hurt. I'm sorry, but it's not it. It's not the pitch clock. It isn't. It is pitchers have been getting hurt for years. And there is a very clear reason why this is happening, at least from my perspective. And looking forward to having a conversation just after 11 o'clock with Lance Brzdowski with Marquee Sports, who's really good at analyzing pitching, and I want to get his thoughts on it. But it's not the pitch clock. What it is guys from the time they are young focusing on velocity and trying to throw as hard as they possibly can for as long as they possibly can. And while you can continue to build strength with muscle, you cannot make your ligaments stronger. You can't do anything about that. And when you put too much stress on it for too long, you're trying to spin the ball more than pitchers ever have tried before. They're focusing on spin rate. They're focusing on velocity. And you do that for a long time, time after time after time, it will eventually lead to injuries. That's what's happening now. Justin Verlander, as you all know him very well, has been a really, really good pitcher for a very long time. He is making a rehab start and coming back from injury, and it was about a week ago he made these comments about this issue.
I don't know, man. It's tough. I think the game has changed a lot. I think it'd be easy to sit here and blame the pitch clock. I think in reality, you put everything together, and everything has a little bit of influence. I think the biggest thing is the style of pitching has changed so much. Everybody's throwing as hard as they possibly can and spinning the ball as hard as they possibly can. And, it's hard to deny those results, obviously. It's a double-edged sword. How can you tell somebody to go out there and not do that when they're capable of throwing 100? This young guy comes up and throws a pitch 95 and gives up a big homer, and everybody's like, what the hell, man? So something needs to change. I don't have all the answers. I know pitching, and I've been, I don't want to beat a dead horse here. It is what it is. I think the data's out there at this point. But when the balls started to change back in 2016 and they started flying out a bit more frequently, I know myself personally that started changing how I had to approach pitching. You have to start swinging. You have to start approaching the batter as I want swing and miss. I can't have him put the ball in play, where the old adage, pitch down, pitch away from the guy, hit your spot, get a weak, get weak contact early in the count. And then you can kind of go up, and that kind of went out the window. When everybody started being able to leave the yard, especially opposite field, you know, and look, I'm not here to, I've said my piece on that before in the past, and it is what it is. As long as we're all out here competing on an even playing field, that's what I care about. And we all have the same baseball in our hands. So that's that.
So that's Justin Verlander, and Tyler Glasnow said some things kind of similar around the same day, but he went on to talk about his the use of, remember sticky stuff? Remember how sticky stuff was the thing from a couple of years ago, and then MLB started to crack down on it? That he said that in order to get the same spin on the ball he used to be able to get typically when they were still able to use substances a little bit, that in order to get that same spin rate, he had to tuck the ball deeper into his hand and work harder. And he said after that first start, he was feeling soreness in places he had never felt it before. So that could be another issue. That maybe Major League Baseball, if they want guys, or if pitchers are going to do what they have to do to get the spin and get the velocity, then maybe they're just going to have to adjust. Major League Baseball is going to have to adjust and make the balls a little grippier than they are. Ooh, that one might come back to bite me. Make the baseballs easier to spin. Let them use stuff to get a better tack on it, so they're not having to force that the way they are now. That could be a huge thing, but it is not the freaking pitch clock. It's not that. And I would venture to guess that MLB is not even going to entertain that idea, because they like the fact that, oh, for example, the game last night in Seattle was 2 hours and 24 minutes, and there was plenty of action in 2 hours and 24 minutes. Cubs getting that win. And there was a car fire on the highway right by the ballpark, which was incredible, and I love the coverage of it. So I want to talk to, and when we come back, we are going to do that. Lance Przedowski is with Marquee Sports. He knows pitching very well, really good analyst, and he's going to join us in a little bit. But don't forget that draft coverage on The Score, you know it's April. We're getting close to draft day, and coverage is brought to you by ChevyDriveChicago.com and the number one draft pick, Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. Draft day's coming up, but Hit and Run's got another hour. We will continue in a moment. I'm Chris Ranji on The Score.